I've got a hot take question for our fellow Commerce Collective podcast listeners. Here's the take. Do fish and cheese ever belong together?
Duh.
But for context, while we were testing the mics before we pressed record, this episode's guest was asked what he had for lunch, and he said a tuna and cheese panini. So I know a tuna melt is a thing. I just can't. I wish I didn't know it was a thing. You'll also notice from the title of this episode that we're off to Europe for the next 30 minutes. But please write me your thoughts on fish and cheese. I'm dying to know. All right, let's actually talk about e-commerce in the EU.
Many, many, many hours later.
Hello, and welcome back to the Commerce Collective podcast brought to you by Flywheel. My name is Emma Irwin, and I am a senior editor and specialist, and today I'm bringing you an overview of the e-commerce landscape in Europe. We'll specifically be looking at the EU plus the UK today, and I know, that one episode covering a span of so many countries doesn't do it justice, but I'm doing what I can. In this episode, we'll cover the general lay of the land, different approaches to your brand's Amazon strategy in the region, the mix of 1P and 3P, and of course, how regulations differ in the EU versus the US, and how this impacts an e-commerce strategy. I have now been talking for so long. Let's meet our guest for this episode.
My name is Mark James. I'm a senior director for EMEA here at Flywheel. For the last 3 years, almost 3 years anyway, I've been building out a business within Flywheel called Perpetua. And since we've merged all the brands under the Flywheel logo, I've been focusing on our SaaS offerings across both the challenger brand segment and our enterprise segment.
Got it. That's a good reminder / description of how Perpetua kind of fits into broader Flywheel now that we've done the merge and all of that jazz. Okay. What is the last thing that you purchased on Amazon?
So my cart and sales habits have changed dramatically in the last 16 months since having my first child, my son. This is kind of a typical first parent story, actually, for the last thing I purchased. So I went to a friend's house on Sunday, and their little girl was playing with some crayons and her first art book. And my son grabbed the crayons, was absolutely loving this activity. So of course, immediately I'm on Amazon, I've got it delivered on Prime. And today's Tuesday, by lunchtime yesterday, my son had crayons and his coloring book on the table. So that was my last purchase. And thankful to say, he loved playing with it this morning. And as of yet, there is no crayons on the wall, although I suspect that will change at some point.
All right, last question before we fully get into it. I'm going to ask it now and then we'll come back to it at the end. But just something on your digital wish list. So it lives in that cart, but you don't actually purchase it, and why? But we'll circle back at the end as a way to wrap things up, if that sounds good.
Yeah, sure.
So today we are talking about e-commerce in the EU and a focus specifically on Amazon later on in the episode. But I would love for you to begin with kind of giving me the lay of the land when it comes to e-commerce in the EU, just because, you know, I'm not super familiar with, I know some things about the EU, but not a lot of them. Can you kind of help me understand the e-commerce landscape?
Yeah, of course. And I think first thing to say is that it is vastly different to the US and North America. So it's completely understandable that it can be totally foreign concept to lots of folks that are not living and breathing the business in you said EU, even that's a complicated topic, right? My job title is EMEA, that includes the Middle East and Africa. EU now doesn't contain the UK, which I won't comment any further on this podcast. But yeah, look, it's just a very complicated landscape. And I'll start with some basic conceptual stuff and then maybe talk about some specifics. So the first few things will sound obvious, but I think when you're executing an e-commerce business, it makes it quite difficult to execute it well. People often forget that Europe is a collection of different countries. And all of those countries have nuances in their economy. They have nuances in their cultures, their norms. A lot of them have nuances in their languages as well, right? And even if you understand and appreciate all of those things, a lot of people aren't aware that, for example, there are different peak events in each country in Europe. So I'll give you a good example, and my wife will love me for remembering this one already. We have Mother's Day coming up here in March in the UK, and I believe it's only in the UK. The Mother's Day for the rest of Europe is a totally different day. So if you had products that were really well catered to Mother's Day as a gift, and made the mistake of advertising those or pushing them or trying to sell them on Mother's Day in the same day as the rest of Europe, it would like land so out of whack just in the UK. And then there's other niche things like who knew that month that February was book month in Sweden? I'm not even going to try and pronounce the Swedish word for that, by the way, so don't test me. So yeah, I guess just generally that makes it a quite diverse and different landscape in which an e-commerce company operates, and it's important you understand all those nuances. Then the maturity of each market is vastly different. So let's take, for example, the UK. So in the UK, e-commerce, the latest stats I've looked at, makes up 34.6% of share of retail sales. So 34.6% of all sales come through e-commerce. And Amazon makes up 27.3% of the e-commerce share. Compare that with Italy. So Italy, only 18.4% of all sales are e-commerce. So effectively half of what we're seeing in the UK. And that is not a surprise if you have ever visited Italy and understood the culture, but somebody that doesn't really know how diverse and different the European market can be, my country, might blindly assume, well, UK's, you know, the most mature market, everything's going to follow quite quickly, and I'll address everything in the same way. And you know, that can be a mistake. And also things like the geography have a big impact too. You know, like the north of Italy geographically is completely different to the south of Italy. So how you deliver products in those locations can change quite dramatically, even within one country. So like, I know this is a long answer to your question, but there is loads to it. The other thing that many will not appreciate unless you've tried to really be active in the European market is there are often strong incumbents markets that exist and are still to this day massively outselling Amazon. So a good example, bold.com. Have you ever heard of bold.com? So bold.com is, let's call it a close competitor to Amazon, and it's in the Netherlands. They also sell products cross-border to some other countries, but they're from the Netherlands. It's approximately three times the size of Amazon today in terms of traffic. And there's actually a second marketplace in the Netherlands called Marktplaats, which is almost double the size of Amazon. So like Amazon has two big competitors to even outmaneuver before they can start thinking about market dominance in the Netherlands. And Poland, here's another one. Poland, so Allegro, which people call like the Amazon of Poland, today is 15 times more traffic than Amazon does today. And that's after Amazon being in the market for, you know, a good couple of years now. So they're really struggling to outcompete these incumbent marketplaces that have established a presence and have become dominant really early on. The final thing I'll talk about is the complexities of operating in each of these markets. The tax rules, the VAT rules, the shipping policies. Okay, granted, in the EU, which, again, doesn't encompass all of the region, but the EU, yes, there are laws and things that are applicable across all those countries, but there are some nuances. And then, of course, when you consider the UK as part of your EU5 strategy, as a lot of customers tell us, the rules are completely different now that we're out of the EU. So I guess that was a really long way of saying, Emma, not surprising to hear that as somebody in North America that is not here, doesn't fully understand the differences, but the market is massively nuanced, and it's why we will always say that, you know, the EU deserves its own time and attention, its own strategy that takes into account all of those nuances I mentioned.
Phew. Okay. So the EU plus the UK is complex. And for my fellow Americans out there, yes, we are a big country and have regionally differing cultures and geographies and laws by state, etc. But we are still one country, and it's worth our time to let our European colleagues shine here. Next up, I was curious in trying to determine the size of the opportunity that exists for brands on Amazon, if it is even possible to make such a broad statement or conclusion based on everything we just discussed.
I don't think you can make that broad of a statement when you look at it regionally. What you can say is that, so a couple of things. Like one, if you look at the growth of Amazon up until, I think it was actually the end of 2023, up until the end of 2023, the growth rate that you saw in North America was outpacing Europe. So Europe was still growing, but North American growth for Amazon was outpacing European growth. Just this year, that space massively converged, and many forecasts that you read will actually say that 2024 will be the first year that the growth of Amazon in Europe will outpace the growth in North America. partly to do with market maturity, partly to do with, you know, established customer base in North America and nascency in Europe. But like, I think that it would be a mistake for anybody to say that it's not, it should not be a large part of your strategy to be considering Amazon. That being said, when we talk about Amazon being a consideration in your strategy, I think that there's really, and I'm gonna, for the sake of simplicity, bucket this into like two buckets, which may or may not be right, but for the purpose of listeners and education, hopefully it makes sense. It depends on whether you're saying taking Amazon as a strategy to be really active or passive. And when I mean active, I mean, you know, going really all in, trying to figure out like how this plays a big part in the overall commerce strategy. What kind of products do I want to sell on the Amazon platform? What else do I want to use the data for, etc.? Or passive being, I know there's an audience there. I probably need to do some brand protection. I need it for consumer research, these types of things. And so, again, I wouldn't say that there's necessarily a right or wrong there, depending on which market you're in, what your products are, et cetera, et cetera. But I think it would be a mistake to not consider Amazon as a big part of a passive or active strategy when considering Europe, even if it isn't the biggest marketplace in the market today. And of course, remember, in every marketplace in which Amazon has gone on to dominate, at some point it wasn't the dominant force, right? And yeah, you know, of course, we're talking to Amazon all the time, and we know that they've got great growth plans for the European market, and you know, that's why we're investing heavily in supporting them to do that. So it's not a simple answer to the question, and it's going to depend on market and product, but generally it should form a core part, even if it's not the biggest marketplace in the region.
Can you give me like a specific example of maybe determining, you can like make up a product or a market or something, but in which it would make sense to go active versus passive? Just a little bit more concrete of an example.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, we'll go back to my example earlier of the types of products that I'm purchasing right now, and I'm one of many in the kind of kids toys type category. Think about it through this lens. What are the product types in which people are looking for things really fast that solve immediate problems that are generally a low-ish price point? So I know that that differs depending on who, you know, whatever the audience is and so forth, but like generally not a luxury product, something that's affordable to most people in their daily income. Those are the types of products that, generally speaking, across the population in most geographies in Europe, people are looking for to get at their fingertips, and note, are historically sold in, you know, like vertical specific stores or niche stores. Like you go to the toy store for that type of thing, which might not be accessible. I mean, for me, the nearest toy store would be a 15-20 minute drive away. So that type of thing, I think it's like an absolute must. The audience is there. Generally, there's not high brand affinity in those segments, or not well established on Amazon, at least at the early stages of parenthood. And so that's an example of one where we know for sure that there's an audience. We know for sure that there's demand. There's also data points you can get to figure out how big is the demand, right? Things like search frequency rank on certain search terms, etc. I think that makes sense to that type of product to go all in on. It's an interesting one on going passive, though, because I've got two examples in my mind. So the obvious one, I'm going to go in the luxury segment, you know, luxury fashion, luxury items that are generally a high price point that take a lot of consideration, a lot of research, and most importantly, have extremely high brand affinity. I don't think it's important right now to go all in on Amazon on those types of products. Makes sense to be passive. I think that you're going to find that there are potentially people trying to sell those products on Amazon, for one. But secondly, look, like there's a lot of data that Amazon can get about shopping behavior, which can guide where is your audience, what are the other types of products they're looking for, and can I actually go and find them across the internet? And look, no better example of that than what's happened with the launch of Prime Video ads, ads on Prime Video. Like that's a perfect place for a luxury brand to create some amazing, compelling content to put in front of the eyes of Amazon shoppers without actually selling any products to them on Amazon. So that'll probably be a more passive strategy, I would say, that makes sense.
All right, let's shift gears here a wee bit. It's always interesting to look at the split of 1P to 3P across large marketplaces region by region, and we focus on this here and there on the podcast before, but mostly regarding North America or APAC. So I asked Mark to tell me about what this looks like in the EU.
I think like one thing that is absolutely certain is that the growth in 3P has outpaced the growth in 1P, and it really differs by market, but abroad, stat across Europe is that we see about 60% of sales now coming from 3P, and that's been growing. So seeing a shift there, we're also seeing more historically 1P brands move to hybrid, so doing a bit of both. Why that's the case, you know, there can be lots of reasons. I think cost pressures have been one. Difficulty forecasting and difficulty with inventory. You know, we've been massively impacted by lots of socioeconomic pieces around us, right through from difficulties in shipping and closing off canals to allow transport through to things like, you know, the war in Ukraine, etc. All of these things play a massive impact to the supply chain. It has made it very, very difficult to forecast, which has meant a lot of them have not been able to fulfill their POs. And yeah, there's obviously that trickle down nightmare effect on the relationship with Amazon as a vendor. So I think that's led to a lot more considering, like, is it a smarter strategy to have a blend and double down on 1P in some parts of our business whilst push 3P on others? So it's a quite changing landscape. I would say that, yeah, increasingly we're talking about like hybrid rather than one or the other. Of course, that's not true in every segment of the market. When we look at the, I'm just going to call it the challenger segment because it's easier, but you know, the Amazon native brands or the fast growing brands that are like really looking to grow and eventually move up market, I think they are still predominantly doubling down on 3P. And they're doing that and trying to put more focus on D2C, and that's their area of diversification rather than blending 1P and 3P with Amazon. So that's kind of the, as you called it earlier, a bit of the lay of the land or how I see it at the moment. One big difference to North America is Amazon's making a real conscious effort to make it easier for sellers, in particular 3P sellers, to sell more quickly and easily across the EU. So an example of this is a program they called EEA, which stands for European E-commerce Accelerator. And just to give you the high level pitch, it's basically the idea that in a few clicks through your Seller Central account, you can go from selling your products today in Germany to effectively all markets in Europe and rely on Amazon to do all of the legwork in obviously the fulfillment, the regulations in the market, making sure the product's good to be sold there, etc. So that the seller doesn't have to do any work. And that's a massively attractive proposition, right? If you're like, I really want to grow my business, the only way I can do that EEA program is by going 3P, going the seller route. If I'm early stages on Amazon and it's not a massive focus for me today because it's not huge in the market, although I think it's growing and I want to place a bet there, the easiest way to do it is to go 3P, and the easiest way to do it is plug into programs like the EEA.
Okay, now that we've learned the general lay of the land, we've touched on active versus passive approaches on Amazon, we've covered 1P versus 3P and all of the nuances there, lo and behold, let's talk about regulation. You are probably already quite aware that government regulation impacts e-commerce and business in general differently in the EU than it does over here in the US. Now, I'm no legal aficionado, although I do feel like I'd be great at closing speeches as a lawyer. But let's turn it back to Mark to tell us a bit about this major element of operating within the EU market.
Yeah, I can't believe we've got so close to the end of this podcast and haven't even talked about this topic yet. And I'm shocked I've got this far without saying the dreaded four letters, GDPR.
Yep.
Look, it's a massive topic. It's also massively complex because there's lots of parts to this. There's lots of different regulation. And given Amazon has such a vast business and is involved in so many different markets, and I don't just mean geographies, right, and what they're doing, their exposure to the policies and the laws is far greater than most other companies. So I won't do justice, and nor am I a legal and compliance specialist, so I'm not going to go too deep into everything that goes on there. But first things first, yes, you're absolutely right. There's legislation all across Europe, whether it's in the EU, the UK, in individual countries, that are nuances that Amazon and other, you know, large e-commerce companies need to be aware of when trying to build out their business. The most famous ones that are particularly relevant for Amazon today, I'm going to talk about three of them very quickly. So first one is GDPR. And there might be listeners that aren't super familiar with what GDPR is. So let me just give you the, like, yeah, 1 second view on it. So it was a law designed, it's an EU law designed to They describe it as harmonizing data privacy laws across all of its member countries. And it's basically designed to protect data rights to individuals. So it was essentially created to alter how businesses, and it's not just businesses, actually, any other organization, handles the information, private information of the individual. So this is as relevant, actually, for Amazon as it is you or I. Like, I under GDPR, I can't share information about another individual without their consent. So that's all about information sharing, which, of course, is a very pertinent topic when you're talking about individuals who provide their bank details, their home address, all of their shopping habits, their search habits. There's a vast amount of information Amazon has their hands on. So they have to be extremely careful with how they handle that data. Otherwise, they expose themselves to the risk of being fined under GDPR. And the fines under GDPR are not small. So they can be as high, depending on your breach, but as high as 4% of company turnover, like global turnover. I'm not talking about EU turnover, global turnover. So if they got, if they broke these laws, there could be a enormous financial impact for them. That one's, you know, relevant for all businesses, and it's really about individual data protection. The second one is something called the DSA, stands for Digital Services Act. And this is, again, a EU legislation that is basically, it's designed for any digital operation to force them to be accountable for everything, right from things like fake news to manipulation of shoppers to political propaganda to criminal activity, child abuse, you know, all the bad stuff of the internet. And so this applies to all organizations of all sizes, but the rules are tiered. So the bigger organizations apply to the biggest 17 companies digitally. Of course, Amazon is one of them. There are basically five areas within the DSA, but the three that are most relevant for Amazon they have to be very careful of. Number one is illegal products. The sale of illegal products can differ by market. Second is illegal content, and that can be on Amazon or it can be by using any sort of Amazon services. And the final one that's very relevant is what they call a ban on dark patterns. So dark patterns is suspicious ways in which you get customers to buy products. So misleading could be misleading advertising. It could be enticing offers that are not real, all these types of things. So the DSA is one that most recently Amazon has been asked to provide more information. So it's been asked to provide information on measures it's taking to comply with various risk assessments and mitigations. I'm not super familiar with exactly what part of the DSA they're involved in. But that's probably the one that people have read the most about recently. And again, there are big financial implications if these rules are broken. And then the very final one is only relevant to the UK. Again, this is a typical sign of how complex it all is across Europe with different rules and regulations. But it's called the DMCC, acronym. After acronym, isn't it? But this stands for Digital Markets, Customers and Competition Bill, which is being passed in the UK through the UK Parliament. And this is designed to protect consumers with the enforcement of competition laws and protections for consumers. So it's, for example, if a consumer is led down a trap to take out a subscription, which was not actually good for them, that could be something that is against the regulation set out in the DMCC, providing unfair competition, effectively encouraging monopolization of a consumer. And it could also be things like fake reviews, anything that is in the interests of creating unfair competition and misleading a consumer. So a big topic. There's lots of complex regulation that could really, you know, unless you really understand it and are taking the necessary steps to guard against it, you could very easily fall into taking practices from other markets, pushing them into Europe and expecting them to be completely fine and unfortunately not being the case. So as I said, no legal expert myself, but I do know for sure that every customer that I've spoken to is very mindful of this. Amazon is very mindful of this. And it's why there's been many successful businesses actually built off the back of helping brands to understand the tax and legal complexity across Europe. By the way, it actually is not just the laws. There are things in cultural practice that cause changes to business that people need to be aware of. So I'm going to give you one quick example. Carrefour, anyone not familiar, massive supermarket in Europe, based out of France, they just pulled all of PepsiCo's products from their shelves. Why? because it was against big price rises on their products that they didn't want to pass on to consumers. So, like, even the retailers are really fighting the cause for the consumers and are protective of consumers' interests. And I think that's absolutely fascinating. Like, that could have a monumental impact on PepsiCo's success over here in EMEA, because it's a massive supermarket chain. So it actually isn't just the regulation. It's how do people view the consumer, their rights, etc. That's very, very important to be aware of.
Yes, that story was crazy. I was like, man, if we did that over here, pulled PepsiCo products off shelves, we'd have world war start, I think. It would start civil war, but then we might move on to a world war but reading that, I was like, wow, they can do that. Like,
yeah, it's crazy.
Crazy. All right. I think we can wrap up, and we're going to do that by coming back to your item on your digital wish list that you just don't actually purchase and why.
Can't quite believe I'm going to do this on a podcast, but I will just caveat and say it's not a selfish purchase. It's for my wife and I, but we actually need to replace our hair dryer. Would you believe it?
That's so exciting.
I know, but I've been searching high and wide because I hope nobody from Dyson is listening to this this podcast, but the hair dryer is so expensive for a hair dryer. So we've been searching far and wide for a more cost-effective but similar technology alternative. So I'm actually very close to pressing purchase on the Shark version, which I've been seeing, but that is what's on my digital wish list. So I really hope that doesn't make the caption for the trailer for this podcast, because it'd be embarrassing for me. But there we go.
Incredible. Maybe Dyson is listening and they'll send you a little discount code or something.
Maybe.
You never know.
And with that, we have made it to the end of another episode of the Commerce Collective podcast. We have gone over to Europe and back in 30 minutes, like Rick Steves' Europe. And if you want to learn more about this region, please let us know and we'll happily continue to make content like this. And additionally, we've got experts like Mark holding it down over there across the pond who want to help accelerate your business. So reach out to Flywheel or me if that is of interest to you. I've been your host, Emma Irwin, and we will see you next time. I can hear some buzz in the microphone. I wonder if it's because all the cords are tangled. Oh no, I've made it worse. Okay, maybe that will do.